Tonight's shiur, starting in the Sefer, Parshas Bemidbar, says in the Midrash Rabbah, it says, HaTorah nitna b'midbar k'dei l'lamed shekol mi she'eino oseh atzmo k'midbar hefker eino yachol liknos es ha'chochma. In order to be kone the Torah, one has to make himself like a midbar. What is a midbar? Midbar hefker. A midbar is a place which, a desert, a place which is hefker. Idea being that just like someone who has a store, he has a little store, we call it here, and what happens? He works very, very hard. He gets up very early in the morning. He spends hours and hours in the store and, you know, selling and buying and merchandise and et cetera, et cetera. And he puts in long, hard hours. And he he makes himself hefker to his job. In other words, he doesn't wake up in the morning and say, should I get up? Should I not get up? It's early. It's cold. Nah, you know, I got to get up. He jumps out of bed. Rain or snow, it doesn't make a difference. And he makes himself hefker. Why? Because he knows it's very important to make those sales. It's his livelihood. So that's how a person has to be when it comes to the Torah. It's make himself hefker, realizing the importance of the Torah. It brings here Lemaisa with Zilberstein himself. Shows the person can make himself hefker or in deso because he feels the chavivus, the dearness of the Torah. He says, he remembers that once he went to his father-in-law, Rav Eliashiv, that's all, and he came into him, and he saw that Rav Eliashiv was in the middle of learning, as he usually was, but when he peeked over, he saw that he was learning Shnayim Mikra Vechad Targum. So he thinks, okay, he says, it's just, quote-unquote, Shnayim Mikra Vechad Targum, nothing serious. So he was sure he'd, you know, pick up his head and start, you know, asking what he would like and this and that, whatever. But he noticed he was so engrossed in the Shnayim Mikra Vechad Targum that he didn't even notice he was standing there. He said, I was standing there for 10 straight minutes and he didn't even notice me. I was standing right next to him. He was so engrossed in the learning. And what made it more of a pella is that what Parsha was, it was Parshat Pekudei. Now, Yaakov and Pekudei are basically repetitions of Truman Tetzava. So it was not like this, you know... It was like basically repetition. And Shnayim Mikra Vechad Targum, people they go through it. You know, some people look over the Sedra and some people overlook the Sedra. You know, so, you go through it. But he said in those 10 minutes, not only didn't notice him, he said he hardly covered any ground. He only learned two or three, just a few psukim in Parshas Pekudei in those 10 minutes. And he was curious, so afterwards, Zilberstein looked inside the Mikras Gadol. He saw it, maybe some interesting Pirushim there. He saw it was almost nothing, because again, it's mostly repetition, so there was very, very little Pirushim. So he was like, what was he doing the whole time? So he saw that Yasha valued every word, every word of the Torah was special, and he lingered with it. With regards to the Kedusha of the Torah, and every word of the Torah, he brings an interesting thing. It's a parish of Rabbeinu Manoach on the Rambam. It's a Rambam in Perek Rvi of Hilchas Sukkah, Halacha Beis. The Rambam writes that if a person has two walls of a sukkah in the form of a gam. So now what's a gam? So Rabbeinu Manoach explains, a gam is we call in Hebrew gimel. Okay, it's a Greek gimel. But how does it look? It looks like a Hebrew dalet, right? Like a 90-degree angle. So the Rambam was describing, you have two walls in a 90-degree angle and in the shape of a gam. So the Rabbeinu Manoach asks, well, since it's the shape of a dalet, so why didn't the Rambam just say, you have two walls in the shape of a dalet? Why would he bring a Greek letter? I mean, say a Jewish letter, say it's in the shape of a dalet. And the truth is, we find the Gemara quite often that. The Gemara says things like that, and uses Greek letters to describe certain shapes and things. So why not use the equivalent Hebrew letter? So he says, amazing thing, he says, Umasha amru abosenu kamin gam, v'lo amru kamin dalet. Why didn't they say like a dalet? Says the Rabbeinu Manoach, shalo ratzu leta'er le'osios hakodesh shum davar shalchol. Because they didn't want to describe using the holy letters of the Jewish alphabet something which is chol, not kodesh. Since the Torah is so holy that they didn't want to use it. Yeah, it's in a 90 grand like a dalet. You don't just throw around a dalet. Dalet's a very holy letter. It's one of the letters in the alphabet. What's interesting, though, is what was the Rambam describing? A sukkah. It's not he's describing, you know, something mundane. He's describing a sukkah. But still, to use a Jewish letter, one of the Hebrew alphabet, to use a letter to describe that, that's considered not dealing correctly with it. And Agav Yashrav El Yashav, is that it really applied to us today also? So he says, sure, why not? To be careful with what we use the letters for. And Rav Zibetson concludes with a Kal Vachomer. He says, look, if that's, you know, just describing a sukkah, you have to be careful. All the more so, the Hebrew letters that come out of our mouth when we speak, so we have to be all the more careful and make sure there's no Lashon Hara, Rechilas, Gesheker, etc. These are the letters of the Hebrew alphabet that are coming out of our mouth. Brings here on the pasuk, first pasuk is Rashi, mitoch chibatan lefana mone otam kol shah, because of their chibat to them, so Hashem counts them constantly. Brings here a shaila, a couple of shailas actually, there was about some man who noticed in the shul, another person who was very, very, davened a tremendous amount of kavana and hislavas. And he used to stand next to this man regularly to daven because he got tremendous chizuk from him and help him in his davening. This is already an older man, and he's for tens of years he was mamish down there davening next to him. Until when this man was, you know, used to daven with his lavas, was quite old, the man next to him looked over once and he saw he was davening the wrong tefillah. It was Nebuch, you know, his older man, he had dementia. And he was, you know, on Shabbos he was davening tefillah of chol and chol Shabbos, whatever, he didn't, you know, didn't know what he was doing. So the person davening next to him, he had a couple of interesting shailas. He's shaila number one. He says, is he allowed to sit within that person's dalad amas? Normally, if somebody davening Shemoneh Esrei, you're not allowed to sit within the person's dalad amas. So here, is that considered that this guy is really davening? He's davening like the wrong tefillah. So can I sit next to him when he's davening? Question number one. Question number two he had is, let's say there was a very small minyan. There's exactly 10 people in the shul, and there's only 6 daveners, and 4 didn't. So that bidyev is okay. If you have 6 people that didn't daven yet, 4 did, you can mitzaref him for minyan. But what if one of those 6 who didn't daven yet was this man? Can he be mashlim and make it now the robe, make it 6, so that you can bring another 4 and daven or not, since he's again not davening the correct tefillah? So to answer these two questions, answer number one, he brings a Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tafkuf Tzadi Gimel, Sif Katan Beis, that says in the name of Magen Avram that the brachas of the Shemoneh Esrei are not me'akvot zuzu. So therefore, a person only knows the one bracha, whatever, you can say it. In other words, in your yotzi, at least the raisa, the davening, even if you can't say all of them. So that being the case, he said, this man is at least saying, you know, the first 3 brachas, the last 3 brachas, they're all the same, and all the Shemoneh Esrei. He's okay, the middle, he got mixed up, Shabbos, not. But he's definitely saying some of the brachas, and therefore he's yotzi to a certain degree. Mimele, you would not be able to sit down next to him. So far as being mitzaref for the minyan, though, he said that's a bigger problem, because if a person's not davening the same thing, the way he's supposed to be davening, you can't daven chasaras hashatz. And since this man was not davening the right tefillah necessarily, so you can't, it's going to be a problem of saying chasaras hashatz. It's at the end, he brings an interesting halacha that sometimes come up, that if, let's say, a person comes to a place and they're trying to get a minyan together and they can't. 7 people, let's say. They got 7, can't get any more people, and time is running out, you have to daven by yourself. So the question is, should they make a point of davening together? You can't have a shliachzibur and everything, you know, no minyan. But when they should try to get the Shemoneh Esrei together and daven at the same time, or no, once you don't have a minyan, you don't have a minyan, finish, do what you want. It's all... So he brings not going through it, but he brings a raya from an etziv that, in fact, you should make an effort of trying to daven at the same time. There's an inyan, even if you don't have a full minyan, as many people that are davening together, there's still a certain koach in that. Okay. Mentioned the midbar again. The person has to make himself hefker like a midbar to learn Torah. So one of the ideas they bring, why a midbar? That just like when a person's in a midbar, he's very often very thirsty because there's no water there, so too a person has to be thirsty for Torah, for every word of Torah. And it brings here the midrash that compares the Talmid HaChachamim to the fish in the sea. And so it's just like the fish in the sea, that even though they are in the sea, they have plenty of water there, but yet if there's a drop of water, it starts raining, and a few drops hit the water, the fish jump at the water as if they have never seen any water before. Which is, it sounds absurd. I mean, they're in water, and so what was another drop of water going to do? What are they? But yet they jump at as if they had no water. So too, Talmidei Chachamim, that even though they're in a sea of learning, yet every drop, meaning every vort, they jump at like as if they haven't tasted seen a vort before. So once a man came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, and he asked him the following question. He says, "Rabbi, I found this not true." He says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, I tried it. I said, I have an aquarium at home with fish. So I put a few drops of water on the, into the aquarium. I want to see the fish jump at the water. They didn't jump." He said, "When I put food there, though, whoa, do they ever jump that, go towards the food?" So you see, it's not true. They don't jump at the water. So... he said that he can't answer that. Maybe the difference is that the water that was coming down, and from Shemaim into the, to the sea, that's fresh water, and therefore the fish jump at it because they want fresh water. He says, if you're going to say that, then there's no chiddush in the midrash. So what's the big deal? They jump at the water even though they're into. Well, of course they're going to jump at it. Well, it's fresh water. So that lechura is not a good answer. So what did Rav Chaim answer him? He said, you have to understand, the difference is that fish in the sea, they're in a tremendous, tremendous, big, huge expanse of water, right? Water everywhere. A sea is huge, right? And because of that, he says, they become a maivin in water. They're mavinim. They understand what water is all about. Since they have so much of it, they're involved with so much water, they know what water is. They understand water very well. And therefore, every single drop is chashuv to them. And therefore, even more few drops fall in, they jump at it because it's chashuv, because they understand what water is. Whereas your fish in your aquarium, a tiny little aquarium, they don't have that expanse of water. Therefore, they don't realize the chashivas of the water. And Mele, fits in with the mashal as well, that the Talmidei Chachamim, which are the Talmidei Chachamim, the people that really appreciate the Torah, those that are in the expanse of water, the Talmidei Chachamim who are involved in tremendous amounts of Torah, they're the ones that value every drop. Rashi says, we mentioned in the pasuk Mitochi Basan Lefanav. Moneo tam kol rega. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's all, he touches up on the pasuk su es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael, what the Torah is pointing out over here, a person has to, we're supposed to count su es rosh, meaning every single person, every single yid, at least in the world, he has his tafkid. And you have to count each one individual. Everybody has his purpose in the world. And once it's Su'es Rosh, then you get Kol Adas Yisrael. Kol Adas Ben Yisrael come together when each person is doing his tafkid. Maisa, once there was a Talmud Chacham, that he saw this guy who was learning, and he didn't look very happy. He said, anyway, look at the Gemara, and he had a very sad look on his face. So he approached the man. He says, what's wrong? So he says, what can I tell you? He says, I'm kind of new to this and this learning thing, and I've been trying to learn, and it's very hard for me. I try, I break my head, and he says, you guys, you're learning, enjoy it, you go through all this safarim and get into it whenever, and you have tremendous chus. But me, what am I? I'm nothing. I can hardly learn 2-3 lines, I envy you, but I'm sad because of my tzmatzav. He said, not only that, to add to it, he says that unfortunately I went to the doctors and they said I have a serious machala, that my time is limited. So I figured, I'd love my limited time on this world, who knows how much time I have left. I'd like to take advantage of it and learn as much as I can, but I can't. How much can I learn? A few lines, so that's why I'm very sad. So Talmud Chacham said, it's very interesting because I saw an article just by chance the other day, and I think it can shed light on your whole situation. He says, what's that? He says, this article was about a composer. His name was Toscanini. And this composer, he was ready later in his years. He was in his 90s, or in his 95. He died when he was 95. So it was less in his 90s. And there was a journalist that wanted to write like memoirs, you know, write up a story of his life or whatever. And so he hung around with him for quite a while and, you know, took notes and heard from him about his life. And anyways, one day the Toscanini said to him, listen, today we can't, you can't, you know, interview me right today because I listen to a symphony. He says, what do you mean? He says, well, I compose this symphony, and there's this orchestra that's going to be, you know, playing it, and they actually sent me a ticket to go hear it, you know, to hear it in life, but yeah, I'm an old man, I'm not well, whatever, I can't make the trip, so at least I want to hear it on the radio, whatever, and to, you know, hear it. So I'm going to be busy listening to this. So he said, do you mind if I stay and listen with you? So he says, yeah, sure, I don't care. Fine. So the symphony comes on. He's listening. And the guy that is the journalist is like, you know, really impressed. It sounds wonderful, whatever. But he looks at Toscanini and he's like this like look on his face, like, you know, like a sour look on his face. So finally when it was over, you know, the journalist says, wow, wasn't that amazing? He goes, He says, not so amazing. He says, what do you mean? It sounded good to me. He goes, I don't know. He says, you know, it's really a pity. He says, what's a pity? He says, a pity because there's supposed to be 14 harps playing and there are only 13. And it's a pity because if there would have been 14 of them, it would have been different. So the journalist says, what? He says, God, come on. You know, all these, this huge symphony orchestra, you can tell there was like, supposed to be 14, there's only 13 harps. He said, come on. He says, he couldn't believe it. So he decides he's going to check into it himself. So he contacts the place where this symphony was held, and he speaks to the person that tried. He said who he was, you know, he's a journalist, whatever. And he asked the people there, he says, tell me, how many harps were there supposed to be at the playing in this thing? So he says, this is a second, looks up in his book, says 14. He says, and how many actually came? He's looking through them. He goes, oh, only 13. I see, I guess one of them didn't show up. He said, he couldn't believe it. So he goes back to the Toscanini and he says, okay, you gotta explain this to me. How did you do that? It's impossible. How did you know? You're here to sell, there's 13 harps now for, how can that be? So he said, listen, let me tell you. He says, I wrote the music. I wrote the notes. I'm the composer, okay? So what do you think I have 14 harps for? Just and the seven's not enough. I need 14. They're not all playing the same thing. They're all playing the same thing. I don't need 14 harps. But each one has his own notes. Each one has his notes what to play. And then if you put together this notes with that, and harmonize, it all comes out to be a beautiful thing. So I noticed that it was a little bit was missing over there because one of the harps who has his notes wasn't there. So it affected the second of the sound of the whole thing. So Mela, that was the maisa. So he tells this person, he says, you know, same thing. You know, you're saying, oh, I can't learn, whatever. Listen, he says, everybody has their notes. So Kodesh Baruch Hu is the master composer, and he put together the world, and he gave everybody their notes. And that's your chelik. That's what you have to play. You have to do what you can do. One line, two lines. You're playing the notes in Hashem's masterpiece. So he heard. He said, wow, you know, thanks. That gave me chizuk. And that was the end of that. So he says, one day, this Talmud Chacham met the son of this man and said, oh, how's your father doing? I know he was ill, so how's he doing? So he says, unfortunately he passed on. He said, but I just want to tell you, you know, if you gave my father a lot of chizik, he says, when you told him that old, you know, vort with the notes, whatever, I want to tell you that, you know, he would constantly say, you know, Hashem is the great conductor in this world, and he wants to hear my notes. My father used to say that all the time, ever since he spoke to you. So he gave him tremendous chizik. It says pasuk called Yotzei Tzava. This the Admor Bichil Mi Alexander. He used to try to help Bachram get out of the draft, and I guess it would be the Russian army, whatever, and the Polish army. That's the Polish army. So once a bachur who used to live in Biala, the city of Biala, he came to the Rebbe, to the Alexander Rebbe, and asked him if he can help him get out of the draft. You know? So he said, okay, and the Rebbe told him that he should learn Maseches Taharos, the Mishnayos Maseches Taharos, or Seder Taharos, rather, B'iyun. He should learn Seder Taharos B'iyun. So the bachur said, no, okay, fine. So he starts his Seder and Taharos, learning B'iyun. And lo and behold, he got drafted. Didn't work, whatever. But, listen, the Rebbe said that that's what I should do, so he didn't stop. He kept going, kept learning Seder Taharos B'iyun. So, in the army, whenever he had free time. So he was a very talented young man, and they took him in to be the actual personal secretary of one of the generals in the army. So he had a chashuv job. And in the evenings, he used to, open up his Seder Taharis and learn B'iyun, his Mishnah. One day, he's sitting there learning, and all of a sudden, the general, who's the secretary of, walks in. And he caught him learning, which was not a good thing, learning, Jewish books over there. And it was, he didn't know what was going to be. He thought it was the end of him now. He's going to be court-martialed, So he's all nervous. And all of a sudden, the general says, to him, calm down, says, don't worry. Says, you don't have to be nervous. Says, well, he says, I'm going to let you in on a secret. He says, I'm Jewish. He said, what? He says, yeah. He says, I'm Jewish. Nobody knows this, but I am. And as it happens, I did some learning on my own, and I see you're learning Seder Ars. I had a kasha on one of the Mishnayos there. Maybe you can help me with. He says, okay, what's the kasha? So he tells him the kasha, and the bachur had been learning it, he was able to explain it to him and everything. He goes, wow, thank you so much, appreciate it. And then the general starts schmoozing with him, where are you from, and who's your father, who's your grandfather. So when he mentions his grandfather's name, the bachur mentions his grandfather's name, the general looks, he makes like a face like, oh, that's your grandfather? Ugh. She says, well, what's wrong? He goes, your grandfather? He says, you're not going to believe what he did to me. He says, what? He says, well, he said, the general says, I was an orphan when I was a boy. And your grandfather had one of his other grandchildren was supposed to be drafted, and he didn't want it to be drafted. And he saw that I was an orphan, so he said, nobody's protecting him. I'll have the people upstairs there take in this orphan instead of my grandson. And because of your grandfather, I have to go to the army, and just because I was a helpless orphan. And so his grandson wouldn't have to go in. And, I never forgave your grandfather for that. So he says, however, he says, you know what? He says, I see you, how a good bacher you are, and you explained me, or this answered my question, and the Mishnayos and everything. So you know what? First of all, I'm going to release you from the army. And second of all, because of you, I'm going to forgive your grandfather for what he did for me because of you. So, thank you very much. He left, and he went back to the Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, it worked. I didn't know what it was going to be because they took me to the army, but Baruch Hashem, I got out because of the Seder, learning Seder Arts. So the Rebbe commented and says, you should know that Lemaisa, that which you're learning Taharas and you're going to the army was all in order that your grandfather should have a mechila from that general. I say, Shaila, he brings here on the pasuk Tifkadu Osam Letzivo Osam Atave Aaron. So Moshe and Aaron had to count, and the people. In Israel. So the question is asked, why both? I mean, why not one person? Why do you need Moshe and Aaron to count camp in Israel? So Rabbi Yonasan Ibish answers, he said, how were they counted? He didn't count their heads. They counted Machaziz Shekel, if you had to give money, Machaziz Shekel, and then they counted all the Machaziz Shekel. So this was money, and then this which was taken as a donation. So Mele, it says in the Gemara Baba Basra, Dav Chesam Abeis, it's Taka Nigbis Bishnaim. When you have people collecting tzedakah, you should do so in pairs. A person shouldn't do it by himself. Should do at least two people. The mela, since the count was done as with tzedakah, with chametz kisa shekel, and tzedakah has to be collected at least with two people, so the mela, that's why Moshe and Aaron were used. Brings here in Yenav Tzedakah an interesting shaila. He says, there was once a poor man, and he was visiting the coastal Moravi. And he sees what looked like a rich American or whatever is at the coastal. And you know, people have a minhag, they write a petek and they stick it in the kotel. So he happened to see something very strange. This man, this American, was wrapping up, but not a petek, he was wrapping up a bill, like money, and sticking it in the kotel. So after he left, the ani went up to the one that went there and dug it out, and he saw it was like $100 bill. And he's like, wow, you know, so he kept it, you know. So afterwards, he had the shaila, can you keep it? Is it okay to keep it? So the question was, what was the purpose of him putting the money in there? In other words, if his purpose of putting the money in the kosel was because he wanted to give tzedakah, so okay, so Hashem made it this ani habit to see and got it, and therefore he got his wish came true. He gave tzedakah. However, it could be that, no, maybe his idea was, I don't know, want to give it to the Beis HaMikdash or something, a donation for the Beis HaMikdash that'll come soon or whatever. And therefore it's not, so it wasn't give, didn't give it its stock, and therefore the ani wouldn't be able to take it. So that's basically, so Shiloh, what was his intent? So the ani was told from the, they spoke about in the Kolom Beis David, and he was told that he can keep it. But the good idea is that maybe you should learn Mishnayos and Meseches Midos, and then you should be baki with the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, since that's what they may be, the, you know, the guy gave it for the Beis HaMikdash, or at least you should learn the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash. However, when they asked Rav Eliashiv at the time what he thought about it, he said that he should can't just dumb keep the money, he should be poted, because it could be that the guy really did give it to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Bet HaKabayis, and therefore he should be poted the money, transfer the value onto a smaller coin, and throw that coin in the Yom HaMelech, get rid of it, and be poted that money, just in case. Okay. So, Maisa, once Rav Meir Shapira, when he was collecting money for his yeshiva, Chachmim in Lublin, he was on a ship going from France to England. And he was with, you know, one of his talmidim, whatever. And all of a sudden, there was a big storm on sea. And the whole boat was, they thought they were going to capsize. And everybody was screaming, and I don't know what's going to be, what's going to be. And the whole time, Rav Meir Shapira was just sitting there learning calmly. So his talmid says, Rebbe, what's going on? How can you sit here like calmly like this at a time when the ship's about to capsize? He says, I'm not worried. It says, Harei Shluchei Mitzvah, Ein Ani Zakin. Somebody involved in a mitzvah isn't damaged. So I'm involved in a mitzvah. I'm collecting money for the yeshiva. So what can happen? And so he wanted to calm down his, you know, this talmid, and he said, you know what? He said, I'm going to go through from the beginning of Shas till the end and count how many times. See, every time the word ship is mentioned in Shas. In Baal Peh, this went through all the Masechet after Masechet is mentioned every time the word ship is mentioned. So the Talmud commented that he didn't forget about any ship in Shas. The only ship he forgot about was the ship that he was sitting on. Okay. So Zela told us Aaron and Moshe. Rashi says that even though it says told us of Aaron Moshe, only the told us of Aaron are mentioned. B'nei Aaron, which are called told us Moshe, lefisha limdan Torah, since Moshe taught them Torah. Melamed shekola melamed es ben chaviro Torah, malo v'kasuf kilu yaldu. Whoever teaches his friend's son Torah as if he gave birth to him. Brings here a very interesting little story with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. As we know, is known as the Ish Emes. Emes Yaakov, as the sefer is called. So Rav Yaakov tells the following story over about his childhood. He said he lived in this town that sometimes in the winter the river that was near his town froze over, and it became like a skating rink, and the people used to skate there, you know, around on the river. So he said people came from all over, you know, to skate there. And he said even, you know, from people, you know, they took advantage. It's exciting, you know, skating, whatever. So they used to always say, but my family, you know, we're not into this, things like that, skating. You know, we're not into that. He says one day, he said, I came to Cheder, and I came a little late. Very, very rare that I ever come late to Cheder. He said, but there's something, he didn't explain what it was, but something was going on in the house, and things got a little hectic, whatever, and he got a late start. So he came a little bit late to Cheder. Okay. So he comes into Cheder, you know, apologizes for being late. So what does the Rebbe do? He looks him straight in the eye, and he says, Rebbe Yankel. He says, not Rav, we call him Yankel. The Yankela, he says, what? And you too are going skating? And that's why you're late, right? You went skating, and that's why you're late for Cheder. How could you do that? And he started screaming at him that he went skating. Of course, that wasn't true. And Yaakov was like, you know, say hi. You know, I wasn't skating. He says, I was just, I just came late because something was going on in my house. We had a little problem, whatever. That's all. Chas v'shalom, I wouldn't go skating. So the Rebbe got even more angry at him, and he says, oh yeah? He says, now you're in big trouble. Because besides the fact that you went skating instead of coming on time for Cheder, you're even lying about it and saying that you didn't go. And, I mean, he was shocked. He said, hey, you know, can you imagine like, embarrassing me in front of the whole class? And it's not even true, isn't it? You know? But the Rebbe continued. He says, so stand up on the chair. He says, the minhag was in the cheder, when a kid was bad, they had to stand up on the chair. And the Rebbe took out his belt and gave him a big whipping. So he, you know, accused him of skating and lying and ever. So he told Yaakov, stand up on the chair. You know, so what can he do? You know, so he said, I got up on the chair. The Rebbe takes out his belt. And he's about to give me a whipping. Says so all of a sudden, siyata d'shmaya, exactly at that moment, who walks into the cheder? My sister. And the Rebbe said, what is it? And he says, oh, excuse me, but Yaakov, you know, my brother forgot his sandwich at home because we had a whole big balagan in our house this morning, whatever. And because of that, you know, he didn't forgot his sandwich, so I'm just bringing in his sandwich. Well, of course, when the Rebbe heard that, he saw his mistake. He said, okay, get down from the chair. So he says, you know, I'm over 80 years old, you know, and he says, you know, I never forgot that mice. and he says, you know what bothers me most about that whole incident? He said, the thing that bothers me most, he says, how is it possible that he thought I lied? He says, could it be that a boy in Cheder lies? He says, it's not Shayach. How could it be Choshev? Yishal b'zoicha. Zoicha titan emes liyakov. The chosamo shakosh baruch hu is emes. And we should all see the emes and be zoicha to be as gold tzedek. You hear me, Amen.